Welcome back to Against the Grain. My name is Dr. Samir Kakodkar. I'm a gastroenterologist and specialist in ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Fecal microbiota transplantation, otherwise known as FMT, is putting the stool from one person into the GI tract of another. This is an accepted treatment for recurrent Clostridium difficile colitis, which is a type of bacterial infection. Because we know that people with Crohn's and colitis have a less biodiverse microbiome, some have hypothesized that a fecal transplant could theoretically be helpful for inflammatory bowel disease. A recent Cochrane analysis published in November of 2018 on fecal microbiota transplantation for inflammatory bowel disease concluded that it may increase the proportion of participants achieving clinical remission and ulcerative colitis, about a twofold increase over placebo. However, because the number of high-quality studies is small and the quality of evidence is low, no solid conclusions could be drawn. There were no studies of high enough quality in Crohn's disease to be included in this analysis. There were also no studies looking at the long-term maintenance of remission or potential for adverse events in either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. This has not stopped some patients with Crohn's or colitis from looking into FMT as an option for treatment. I interviewed Saffron Cassidy, who is the director of a soon-to-be-released documentary called Designer Shit. She has suffered with ulcerative colitis for nearly a decade, and in this film sets off on a journey to see if FMT could potentially cure her. In the process, she interviewed many experts at the forefront of this field, and today will share with us some of the information she has learned. As a disclaimer, this is not an endorsement of FMT for treatment of inflammatory bowel disease. This is not FDA approved for this condition, and at this point is still being actively researched. You can also contact me in case you have any questions about this podcast or if you'd like to make an appointment to see me. My email is samir3@gmail.com. Saffron, thanks for coming on. And can you first off tell us what your movie is titled? And just a little bit about what made you want to make this movie.
So the movie is called Designer Shit, and it explores the world of fecal transplant and its safety and efficacy for various conditions, with a specific focus on ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, IBD, because I personally suffer from ulcerative colitis. And what drew me to making a film about the subject matter is, you know, as a patient of ulcerative colitis, I had been researching fecal transplant for years and years. I was diagnosed 9 years ago, and I've always been really interested in fecal transplant. But as a person who doesn't have a science or research background, it can be really complicated trying to decipher some of the information that you find online. I think this topic is, you know, on the verge of blowing up in the mainstream right now. You hear a ton of people with clickbait headlines, you know, talking about how wonderful this treatment is, how it's going to cure all these illnesses. And on the flip side, you hear these clickbait articles that it's a dangerous fad. And personally, when I, you know, whenever I spoke to my doctor about it, he didn't have a lot of information to share with me. So I just found it really frustrating trying to understand and decipher all this information on my own. So I decided I should make a documentary film about this so I could personally learn about it and hopefully, you know, make this topic more accessible to people like me who, you know, are just looking for answers on, is this a viable treatment option for me?
So before we get into the specifics about, because I know you interviewed many experts in the field, really top scientists and people involved in the business and stool banks, and we'll get more into that. But before we do, I just wanted to briefly go over kind of what you went through before making this decision that I'm interested in fecal transplant, because many people end up looking outside conventional medicine when conventional medicine either doesn't work at all or stops working, and then they have to figure something else out. So what was your experience with the conventional treatment of ulcerative colitis?
Well, when I was diagnosed 9 years ago, I was prescribed anti-inflammatory medications, 5-ASAs. And at the time, I was very happy with them because they got me into remission really quickly. Progressively over the years, they stopped doing as much for me. And then I was being put on acute rounds of prednisone. And I was worried about, you know, stepping up to a higher class of drugs that maybe has worse side effects. So I think 5 years into my illness, I started doing a specific carbohydrate diet, which was very beneficial for me. And I saw fecal transplant as a possible continuation of that. So I'm very interested in alternate therapies in conjunction with traditional medicine. Because I do find, I mean, in my case, and I hear this from a lot of people I talk to with IBD, that, you know, the medication, first of all, is a Band-Aid solution. And they become less and less effective over time. That, to me, is something that really scared me because, you know, this isn't a drug that you're taking for a couple of years and then you're better. Most of us are diagnosed in our late teens, early 20s. You're looking at decades and decades, your entire life, dedicated to a drug regimen. And depending on what drug you're placed on, you know, that can be a really scary reality. So I think looking for alternative treatments in conjunction is always a good idea.
So did the specific carbohydrate diet not completely get you where you wanted to be? And that's why you looked into fecal transplant, or was it that you felt that it worked and you wanted to transition into something else because you didn't want to be on the diet forever?
Specific carbohydrate diet worked for me in the sense that, so I was on anti-inflammatories and those drugs weren't doing much for me anymore. When I started specific carbohydrate diet, my 5-ASA medications started working for me. So it was the diet in combination with those drugs that worked for me.
Okay.
Specific carbohydrate diet didn't allow me to get off my medication or decrease my medication. So I guess I'm always looking for ways that I can be on less medication, you know, taking these drugs every other night instead of every night, any way I can reduce it. And I've been told by many doctors that that's probably not possible, and I just don't like to believe that. So I'm constantly looking for ways to kind of limit the amount of drugs that I'm taking.
I see.
Through natural solutions.
So you've never been on any biologics or immunomodulators, those things you were not interested in because of the side effect profile, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
I see. Okay. So then you looked into this, and where did you first hear about fecal transplant? Was it just something you saw on the news or one of these clickbait articles online that you mentioned?
I heard about it from a family friend, and then I started seeing it more so in the news. And what drove it home for me was I was out for dinner with some friends, and they mentioned someone who had done it at home using his mother as a donor and had been in complete remission, symptom-free, medication-free for 7 years. And they mentioned the name, and I said, oh, my God, I know that person. It was an acquaintance I had. I had no idea that he had previously suffered Crohn's colitis and that he had done this treatment. So I linked up with him, and he told me his incredible story. And, you know, sometimes it does take just hearing it from one person who you know personally. And when I talk to doctors about this, they kind of dismiss one-off stories. You know, that's anecdotal evidence. That's not clinical research. It shouldn't matter that much. But I think it does. I think that, you know, we're all looking for stories of hope. So when you hear of someone that personally did this and had great success, sometimes that's the thing that sparks it more for you than clinical research alone.
Absolutely. I think the power of meeting someone or talking to someone personally who's had success is leaps and bounds more profound and inspirational than just reading something like an Amazon review or reading something in a book. To actually see the person or meet them is definitely very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can also kind of bring about this almost like placebo effect, and that can potentially also enhance the effect of treatments as well. And my philosophy is any way you're able to get to success, even if part of it is placebo, is fine as long as you're feeling better, you know. And I'm not saying that any of these things like the specific carbohydrate diet or fecal transplant or anything like that is a placebo effect, but I think any treatment you try that you believe in, that you actually believe is going to work, has a better chance of working, as mm-hmm. opposed to something that's forced on you that you don't totally philosophically believe in. It can still work, but I think the odds are better if you believe in what you're doing.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. Especially when you look at things like specific carb diet and FMT, you know, maybe you find specific carbohydrate diet really restrictive and it's a pain in your butt that you have to do this and you're angry about it. But if you have some sort of belief that, you know, this is beneficial for me, this is going to work, it makes it more bearable.
Sure. Right. It's interesting that you mention the specific carbohydrate diet in combination with fecal transplant, because they're both targeting kind of theoretically targeting the same thing, the microbiome. Inflammatory bowel disease, my philosophy after studying it for many years and seeing so many patients is that you could pretty much break it down into two mechanisms of inflammation. I think for most people, it's a combination of issues with the microbiome, gut barrier integrity, and also immune dysregulation. So the people who do well on medicine, they have a predominant component of their inflammation that is the immune dysregulation. And then the people who do well on diet alone, maybe their inflammation is more related to gut barrier, microbiome, et cetera. But I think there's a lot of people who have both going on and need to get both of those addressed. And a lot of times people need both medication and diet or fecal transplant or whatever to get optimal outcomes. But logistically, there's a lot of hoops to jump through in order to get to some of these interventions that target the microbiome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I did see the connection between specific carbohydrate diet and FMT. I think that's part of what got me interested in FMT, was that I had some success with specific carbohydrate diet, that I thought if that treatment's beneficial, then this could be too. Especially when we see specific carbohydrate being used to treat things like autism. FMT, too, we're starting to see in clinical trials that there could be some efficacy for autism. So, you know, it's a really important place to look, the microbiome. It may not unlock all of our answers, but I think it's really exciting that, you know, research has decided to really focus on this area of the body.
So let's get to what you learned. Let's get to kind of the interviews you did with many people, really top people in the field. And if you could just kind of give us some key points that you, and I know people should watch the movie to get the full experience of what you went through and the interviews and actually hearing it from the people themselves. But if you can just give us a few points that you learned that could be helpful for patients interested in FMT.
Okay. I could start by mentioning a clinical trial that we focused on in the film. It's McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. So I think they were the first to register a trial of FMT for ulcerative colitis. And they're on their second trial. So their findings so far for efficacy for ulcerative colitis, and I've seen this from Dr. Barodi has quoted similar numbers, and other naturopathic doctors have quoted similar numbers, that they're seeing about 25% of people achieve full remission using this treatment. So that's, you know, complete absence of symptoms and healing of the mucosal lining. An additional 50% are seeing some degree of improvement. So, you know, they're seeing some of their symptoms reduced. Maybe they're able to reduce some of their medication. The final 25% are seeing no symptom relief whatsoever. So to me, that sounds pretty good. You could say only 25% of people get better. From my perspective, maybe it's glass half full thinking. 75% of people have some benefit, which I think is really exciting. And for the 25% of people who don't get any benefit, they're not seeing any downside. There's no negative symptoms associated with this. So for those reasons, I think it is, you know, a really kind of tolerable and acceptable form of treatment that is relatively safe, believe it or not.
So
I think, yeah.
So though that trial didn't show any adverse events, there's been some that have been reported that I'm familiar with, like septic shock, aspiration pneumonia, toxic megacolon. And who knows if that was really the effect of the transplant versus something that would have happened anyway. But particularly with the case of the aspiration pneumonia, that was also due to one where they administered it through like a nasogastric or nasoduodenal tube. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of that is route dependent. But there are certain cases of people getting worse, but you're right. In these clinical trials, the ones that I'm familiar with as well, there hasn't been serious adverse events noted between FMT and control patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it depends who you speak to. Because when I speak to someone like Dr. Brody, who's done a ton of these, he's very adamant on the fact that, you know, this is incredibly safe. Whereas some doctors will not say that. You know, you should never be doing this DIY without a doctor present and supervising you because there are risks. And because this is such a new treatment, there are so many unknowns. So you always have to be careful about those risks, of course.
So Dr. Brody is someone I have not spoken to personally, but at one point I did do like a phone consultation with his nurse. This was long ago. So just to get some information about fecal transplant, because the first way I learned about him was he is a proponent of the theory that Crohn's disease is caused by a bacteria called Mycobacterium avium paratuberculosis. And he was involved in studying certain antibiotic combinations to treat that particular bug in Crohn's patients, which has had variable efficacy. The most recent ACG guidelines on the treatment of Crohn's disease do not recommend antibiotics targeting MAP based on the current evidence. But yeah, so I was wondering what is his particular protocol? I know he's done many of these, and he does this in Australia. And what's unique about him is he's doing fecal transplants in patients just for inflammatory bowel disease. And because in this country, it tends to be done only in the setting of C. diff. And as far as doing it for ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, that's only in the form of clinical trials at this point. But if you're just a patient who wants to get this done for IBD, it's going to be very difficult to find somebody, pretty much impossible to find somebody who's just going to do it for you outside of a clinical trial, and if you don't have C. diff as well. And not just C. diff, but C. diff that doesn't respond to multiple courses of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So our FDA guidelines, yeah, as you said, you have to, if you have C. diff, you have to fail multiple courses of antibiotics before accessing this treatment. And for other conditions, you're out of luck. Dr. Brody, mind you, he has a wait list of about 2 years, does treat various conditions. So he treats IBD. He also treats IBS. Patients will come to him with diarrhea or constipation. And some of like his most interesting findings are that, you know, patients come to him with constipation. They also have Parkinson's, and they see some form of relief from their Parkinson's symptoms as the result of getting rid of their constipation through FMT. And his protocol is, he does believe in the bacterial connection, and he starts with, and he believes that FMT is fighting off bad bacteria. He believes that that's what's happening. He starts off with antibiotic treatment, usually like vancomycin, with the intention of kind of clearing out some of that bacteria and then repopulating it through the FMT. The McMaster trial, the first trial they did was placebo control. The second trial they did, which I think they're still doing right now, or they've just finished, was taking Dr. Brody's theory. So they had, you know, one group that was given antibiotics before the treatment, one group that was not given antibiotics before the treatment. And do we see a difference in which group recovers? And from what I've heard, they haven't found a real difference between the two. So perhaps antibiotics are not necessary. But that's the protocol that Dr. Brody uses for all of his patients. He's never compared people who don't do it. But he has great success with some of his patients. So,
okay. And I do just have to say, when claims are made about, oh, Parkinson's gets better or autism gets better, we have to take that with a grain of salt, because these are very complex disorders that, you know, again, anecdotal success from one person's experience doesn't always translate to large clinical trials or randomized controlled trials. So for those listening, I don't want this information to be misinterpreted that, oh, if FMT works for Parkinson's, I should run out and try to find somebody or do it myself or something like that. That's definitely, from my perspective, not advisable.
When I spoke to Dr. Brody and he gave that example of a case study of one patient, he says, oh, I was so excited. I've just cured Parkinson's. And then he reels that back in by saying, well, no, we continued, you know, doing it for Parkinson's patients with constipation. It helped their constipation. And in about 10% of people, we saw some degree of improvement in Parkinson's. So no, for sure, you know, we don't have enough clinical evidence there yet. But there is a clue there, which is interesting. That requires, you know, more clinical trials to keep figuring out what this connection is.
Right. Now, I definitely anecdotal success stories are kind of the launch pad to clinical trials to, that's how you come up with ideas, right? Like, is this going to work or not? But I understand, you know, patients are in a tough, no matter what health condition you have, you want to get better as soon as possible. And you're not just trying to wait around for research to get done for you to get better. And that's particularly a problem in inflammatory bowel disease, because people are suffering and they may potentially be getting worse and headed towards surgery. And there's all these treatments out there that people claim may work. And physicians are telling patients, we don't have the data yet, so we can't recommend it. Meanwhile, some people are facing possibly having to have surgery, which isn't the end of the world. It can actually be very beneficial for patients who are in bad shape from colitis or IBD in general. But, you know, people don't want to wait around sometimes for some things that seem theoretically like they could help with a potential low downside. And sometimes people go off the grid. Now, I've actually seen people post videos on YouTube doing fecal transplants on their own. And my first episode of this podcast, there was somebody who really tried a lot of different things. And one of the things he tried was doing a fecal transplants from his own baby at home, which obviously I'm not advocating any of these things, but I'm just saying this is what's happening. So is that something that you've come across in the making of this movie, is people doing it themselves at home?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are tons of videos on the internet. There are books that you can buy off Amazon and how-to guides. I don't know how many people are doing it on their own, because I think a lot of it is secretive. And I mean, one of the biggest issues is that doctors can't support it and a lot of times don't want to support it. So they're not even offering help in terms of screening a donor, which is, you know, one of the most important things that you absolutely have to do if you want to do this DIY at home. So, you know, it's getting into a dangerous game, because I do completely understand why some very desperate people just want to try this and they don't want to wait. But without the support there, they may be going about it in a dangerous way.
And it is unclear at this point about the one of the reservations I have about the whole fecal transplant movement and going towards this direction is long term. We don't know what the effect of this would be. And although it's something that's been used actually for centuries for different kind of digestive ailments, and it kind of lost its popularity over time, and now it's getting a resurgence. But who knows what else could be transmitted through stool? Like, certain conditions could be helped, but, you know, who knows if other autoimmune diseases or infections that we're not aware of could be transmitted through this. So it's still definitely a risky thing. You know, the medications we use for inflammatory bowel disease, the side effects are relatively well characterized, because it's tested in many patients before it gets approved by the FDA. So we kind of know what to expect, at least for, but as far as long-term, I guess we don't have that data either, because Remicade's only been available since 98, but long-term, we don't know what the medications can do either. So it's a risk doing either.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel when we talk about the risks of fecal transplants. I weigh that against the risks of long-term pharmaceutical drug use, which, once it you know, passes all the FDA trials. We know the short-term side effects. We don't know what happens if you take that drug over a lifetime. And that's what we're talking about with chronic illness patients. You're going to be on this drug for probably the rest of your life. What are the side effects of that? Well, we won't know until we have a cohort that's been on it for 20, 30 years. So when it comes to FMT, it's true. We've seen some of these weird, wacky side effects, like Parkinson's patients getting better or, you know, alopecia patients growing hair. These are anecdotes, but they are clues to the types of things that may, you know, live in the gut that could be affected by doing something like FMT. So, you know, there's a whole laundry list. If you go to a naturopath, there are naturopaths who will help you find a donor, screen that donor, and help you with the DIY protocol. There's a huge laundry list of what you should be looking for in that donor. And it's kind of crazy because we're just trying to eliminate any possible risk.
But I wasn't aware that naturopaths were actually doing this. So they are doing the exact same screening protocol as would like an MD doing it for like C. diff. Do they screen for the same pathogens?
We interviewed one naturopath for our film. And yeah, I think he does the same screening. He's a naturopathic doctor. So he will provide you a list of what you should be looking for in a donor. You come to him with your donor, and he will do the screening for you. And then he will tell you how to do fecal transplant, but completely hands off. Like he can't touch your blender or your enema.
Right.
But he can provide some sort of guidance, which I think there's a role there. It's beneficial. Because without that, people are just following instructions on the internet. But the list that he gave, I have it in front of me now. The person can't be obese, can't have any history of chronic or acute GI disease, no chronic infectious disease, no mood disorders, no history of cancer, no metabolic disease or chronic fatigue, chronic pain, can't have been on antibiotics in the last 6 months. They have to have a formed bowel movement every day or close to every day. Even things like this donor should be vaginally delivered, breastfed, have clear skin, clear thinking, eats a healthy whole foods diet with a lot of diverse fiber. Like, you know, there's this huge list. You're looking for like a person who's like superstar health, which is actually very difficult to find. That's why when you look at, you know, Open Biome Stool Bank, which is the largest stool bank in North America, they say only 3% of applicants make it through their screening process because they're not taking any risks of who knows if someone with a peanut allergy could transfer their peanut allergy to you through FMT. We just don't know that yet. So you have to be super cautious at this point in the research.
Can you tell us more about, you did spend some time talking with the people at UBiome. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about how that works or generally the donor, like how does somebody go about finding a donor and what goes into that decision?
So at Open Biome, they're based in Boston, and a lot of their donors are university students from the area. And they won't give out their exact eligibility protocol because they don't want people to kind of study it before and make a cheat sheet and say all the right answers. But they screen for a ton of things. Only 3% of the population gets in. Those donors are paid $40 per donation. And I believe each donation creates 6 treatment samples for C. difficile, and they ship those treatment samples to 1,000 hospitals across the U.S., specifically for C. difficile. They also use use those samples in clinical trials. So they will donate that stool to clinical trials for various illnesses that they are kind of involved in.
So one of the trials I'm aware of through FMT that showed efficacy, I think this was the one done through Australia, was they noticed one particular donor had better outcomes compared mm-hmm. to the others.
Yeah.
And I just wonder why that has not been capitalized upon. Like if I was somebody who was involved in that trial who donated and knew that like one of the people had better outcomes, I would try to find out if I was that person. Because if you're that person who is in one of these well-designed trials that show that your stool is doing something for these people, number one, you can help a lot of people, potentially. And number two, mm-hmm. you could actually start quite a successful business there, being that, because I believe it was one person in that trial where they noticed it was that person's stool that was having a better effect than the other people's.
So. Yeah, so that's the McMaster trial in Hamilton, Ontario. So yeah, we spoke to the researchers in that trial. Yeah, they had five healthy donors, which they screened for with, like, you know, all the stand. These were health superstars, all five of them. Donor A had no success, helped none of the people that stool was treating. It was donor B that had a huge success rate, was the clear winner. And, you know, they're doing a lot of work right now at just looking at that stool in comparison to the other donors and kind of going, what is in here? Like, what is it about this person's stool that is so beneficial to this specific condition? Could it be beneficial to other conditions? So far, they don't know. It's so complicated. It's like we don't even know what we're looking for here. But I just find that so interesting and, like, kind of funny. Like, I agree with you. When I heard that, I was like, who is this person? Can I meet them? I want that magic stool. Like,
yeah. You're not allowed to, right? According to their protocol.
Oh, no.
It's completely anonymous, well, right?
Yeah. Even the people who were, you know, analyzing the data, I was like, do you know who this person is? Do you know their background? What's their diet? And they're like, we don't know any of that stuff. I'm blind to that, right? I'm just looking at this person's stool. That's my job. So
somebody should know. Somebody should have those documents. I understand some people in the trial who are involved in analyzing the stool are probably blinded to that, but there should be some database where that, because this person had to communicate with the study staff, had to donate, their contact information must be there. Now, I don't know if that breaks protocol or what they're allowed to do based on the IRB that was submitted. But it is interesting that there's just, like, one person out there who could potentially help a lot of people, and that person definitely needs to be studied. And I wonder if that person is even aware of the results of the trial. If for some reason that person is listening to this, if I were you, I would contact that center, demand to know if you were donor B.
Yeah.
and do something about it, because you can help a ton of people. And again, that's a possibility. Maybe donor B, maybe he just got lucky with this trial for the people that he was a donor for, and maybe it wouldn't help everybody, et cetera, et cetera. That tends to be the trend, right? If something has a lot of promise in IBD, be it a drug, a treatment, or whatever, and it seems like, oh, this is going to help everybody, then they test it out in more people, and roughly a third of people get better. Like, that's kind of like what's the, like, maybe two-thirds to a third get better. But conservatively, long-term, it's usually about a third. And that's, like, across the board with, like, any treatment. In the specific carbohydrate diet world, again, there's, like, randomized controlled trials going on now. There's a lot of criticism about how those trials are being run, but ultimately many people in the community believe most people can be helped by the diet, but we'll see. You know, that's what people thought about a lot of other treatments in the past, and when you actually study them long term and everybody, not just people who are interested in SCD and believe in it and think it's and have the proper support system, but if you actually test it in everybody, let's see what percentage actually gets better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I've read some of your work about specific carbohydrate diet, and I'm so appreciative that you do this work, because it is really hard to find research on diets. You know, with pharmaceutical companies, they have a ton of money to throw at clinical trials. With diets, you know, there's less money to work on. I can't even imagine how difficult it is to control a trial like that, to make sure that everybody you're working with is eating a specific way. But it's so important, because I really do think it's the key to unlocking some answers.
Yeah, and it's also, I try to be an objective voice, even though, you know, I've been on the diet, et cetera. But I really try to keep an open mind to everything. And so that's why I generally think diet and medicine are kind of like the, as of right now, are the workhorses. Medicine definitely has better evidence, but that's partly because the funding, there's more funding and interest in medicine in the from the research perspective than diet. So, okay. So what else, who are some other people you spoke to? Now, one of the things that I've brought up on a prior podcast is the and I don't know if, have you heard the podcast that I did with Garen Aglietti, who's doing fecal transplants for people using donor, like he uses a rural population in Mexico that's like completely untouched by civilization. They live in caves. They don't eat any processed food. They're outside all the time, etc. And he uses that population as a donor for himself, and he's used it in a few people with IBD as well. Again, anecdotal, but I've always wondered why these, and the best designed clinical trials are usually done for FMT, have been done in Western countries, have been done in US, Canada, Australia, Europe. So, and most people are using donors from the same country that they're from, right? Like either relatives or people within a similar environment. But I wonder, I hope they do trials in the future where they're getting people from disparate areas of the world, preferably people from areas of the world where the microbiome is known to be more biodiverse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that will be really interesting to see. I also, you know, there are different theories on what FMT is doing exactly. Like we mentioned Dr. Barodi, he has this belief that there is a bug that needs to be killed. And, you know, you're sending in healthy bacteria to help kill that bug. Another researcher I spoke to, Emma Allen Verico from University of Guelph, her theory is that it's working more like a Band-Aid. Like these bacteria are coming in to kind of take some of the load off to let your own bacteria develop. So, you know, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to send in new bacteria that's foreign to us? Or are we, you know, looking for a way to replenish our own microbial bacteria? Is it more beneficial to use a family member? This is one question I have. A family member who has a very similar microbiome to us because, you know, they're shoring up maybe the things that we lost due to diet or antibiotic use, but they have the same microbiome, so we're kind of mirroring it and boosting it up. Or because you got your microbiome from your mother or your family and it's problematic, is a family member the worst possible donor? These are things that I'm really curious about because I've seen people who have had really great success using, you know, a mother, child, people with a very similar microbiome to their own.
I guess, yeah, I guess it just has to be, we have to wait for the research to figure out what really is the ideal donor. But it seems like they're on the right track as far as really trying to get to the root. Like when they do these microbiota analyses, I think it is important to do that based on who has success to see what is the particular components that are helping. And I think there is this goal amongst the gastroenterology community to drill down what is it specifically in the FMT that's helping, and so that they can standardize it and make some sort of product that's very standardized and not so like, not take this shotgun approach where it's just, you're just giving somebody like so much bacteria and instead to like drill down to the particular strains that are making the difference and maybe make a probiotic. I don't know if that approach is really going to be successful because we know that probiotics are not that helpful, particularly for Crohn's, not helpful, maybe some efficacy for ulcerative colitis. But I think there's, it's just such a complex thing you're doing with FMT to actually figure out what's specifically happening. There's probably multiple things that are going on.
We have various perspectives on that in this film. So we have Emma Allen Verico, microbiologist from University of Guelph. She's teamed up with Newbiotics, a pharmaceutical company, and she is working on isolating specific microbes and, you know, incubating them and growing them up in the lab with the goal of creating a pharmaceutical drug that is, you know, similar to a probiotic, right? These are like lab-grown microbes, isolating the ones that we know to be beneficial. And that's a great idea. If that's possible, that would be amazing. I would love a pill that is full of the specific microbe that I need to make me better. But then the question is it plausible? I mean, she believes it is, but then I have other researchers in the film who go, you know, science has the history of like mucking up what's natural. We tried to do that with breast milk, right? We created a formula where we're like, we know what's in breast milk. We know it's good for kids. We'll just recreate it. And now we realize, you know, we don't even understand the intricacies of what is in that that makes it so beneficial. It could be the same thing as stool. You know, hopefully one day we do find out what the magic formula is for donor B. But we're definitely a long way away from that if we can do it at all.
There are some studies that have characterized the changes that have been seen with the microbiome changes in IBD that have been seen with FMT. And, you know, some studies show a decrease in proteobacteria, which is otherwise thought to be increased in IBD, and then an increase in firmicutes that are otherwise decreased in IBD, and an increase in bacteroides, otherwise decreased in IBD. And then what I found fascinating is there's an increase in Lacnospiraceae, which is a particular strain that in my research that is actually in process right now, but some preliminary findings of our microbial or microbiome analysis of people on the specific carbohydrate diet who've done well, at least who are in clinical remission, they have more Lacnospira in the microbiome of the stool. And the amount of Lacnospira correlates inversely with fecal calprotectin or otherwise inflammation. So these are preliminary results that are likely going to be published soon. But I found that information in other studies looking at FMT. But another thing to keep in mind is I just read another article about, you know, people who live in homes where you use a lot of cleaning products that are not like eco-friendly, you know, like just regular cleaning products, antiseptic products, and just regular stuff to clean your house, and you grow up in that environment, those people have more Lacnospira in their microbiome, and they have a tendency to be more obese. So these associations are confusing. You know, you can have one bacterial species that seems to be very beneficial for one disease entity, but then in another one, it seems to be worse. So it's just very complicated. So I think it's not just the actual bacterial species, but it's like the whole community, how they interact, the amount of one versus another. And it's just so complicated that I don't
know. Absolutely. Or how it interacts with your specific genes. Yeah, it's just, there's a lot going on. It's hard to just isolate the one specific bacteria and know its function without its relation to the rest of it.
Right. And who knows, like, in my study, that Lacnospira association was probably induced by the dietary change. But is it the bacteria that is causing the effect? Or, like, if you take the food out of the equation and you just give them the bacteria, is that going to come? Are you going to have the same outcome as opposed to getting there with food? And maybe the food is doing other things that the bacteria itself is not, that when you take the food out of the equation, you don't get the same result.
Right.
So what is the, from your interviews, what is the ideal, like, protocol for this that you believe should, as far as, like, the donor stool, should it be frozen or fresh? And what's the way to actually get FMT? From below, through capsules, through an NG tube. What is your overall sense of that?
So the general protocol that I've seen from Dr. Barodi from the Master Trial is via enema, and you should hold it in for at least an hour. And they tend to do 10 treatments over 10 days. That's kind of the standard that I've heard for ulcerative colitis. I've also heard that frozen is just as good. You should be using the stool, you know, within 8 hours after it's been produced. But in that 8 hours, you could, you know, freeze it, blend it, and then freeze it, and that's just as beneficial. Likewise, people are finding just as good results taking that fresh stool and freezing it and putting it into capsules. The thing with the capsules is that you have to take 30 capsules within 30 minutes or something like that. So you're ingesting a lot. That sometimes I think that enema is actually easier. But, you know, people who do it themselves, we're seeing clinical trials and with Dr. Brody, you know, 8 or 10 transplants over 10 days. Some of the people who have done it at home have done hundreds of these and seen really, really good results, right? So after 2 weeks, they weren't getting better and they just decided this is going to work. This has to work. And it took 100 transplants and they had amazing results. So in terms of protocol, we don't really know length of time yet. We know for C. difficile, it oftentimes takes one transplant from one healthy individual. Mm-hmm. With colitis, obviously, there's a lot more variables that we're not aware of yet.
Yeah, that's the other thing that kind of made me less bullish about FMT is the potential of needing like maintenance treatments and having to do it over and over again. Because, I know it's unclear at this point how many you're going to actually need if you're one of these responders. But that, and there's also the disgusting fact, like it just seems like a disgusting thing to do repeatedly. But
and time consuming, like, sure. You know, you have to blend that. Well, you know, one of the benefits is that it's free, right? Yeah. So it is effective for you as much as a pharmaceutical drug, then you might choose that because it is cheaper and it is natural. But the downside is that, yeah, you know, it takes time to blend and prepare every day, not to mention the cleanup process after. And you do have to lie with it in you for at least an hour. The longer the better. If you can lie there for 2 hours with it in you, it's even better. You know, this isn't it's not as quick as taking a pill and walking away. It's time consuming.
Okay. So before we wrap up here, I was wondering if you had, well, first of all, if you can tell people how they can find your movie, information about your movie and when it comes out.
Yeah, our website is designershitdocumentary.com, and we're also on Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up for our newsletter, and then you'll get updates on when, you know, our trailer is released or when the film is ready to be released. For now, we just have a website with some resources about FMT, some information we learned from our experts, and some short video clips. So you can view all of that now if you follow us.
Okay, and is there just one piece of advice you'd like to leave people who are currently, you know, interested in FMT or interested in pursuing it? Any words of wisdom to those people after going through this journey and interviewing all these experts?
Well, one of the main themes of the film is being an empowered healthcare consumer. If you have an interest in this treatment, you owe it to yourself to do a lot of research and to really push your doctor to do some research too. You know, just because your doctor doesn't know much about it or thinks it's gross or disgusting, if you are really interested in this treatment and want to try it, I would, you know, push your doctor to be supportive about it and do some research as well and find out a way that, you know, is safe and effective for you to get access to this. It's not worth going behind your doctor's back to do this, but, you know, if you can push for some help and understanding, it might be beneficial for you if you're suffering from ulcerative colitis.
Okay, thank you so much for being on. Thanks for your time. And I look forward to this movie coming out. I'll definitely be one of the first people to go out and see it.
Okay, great. Thanks.